Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. We would like to wish a warm welcome to our new listeners on KVMR in Nevada City. If you have any friends or family members in Nevada City, please let them know that they can now listen to Your Call daily from 11 to noon. On today's show, we are talking about social studies. Students are spending less and less time in social studies class, where they learn about government and civics. When No Child Left Behind was signed by George W. Bush in 2002, the emphasis in schools was on math and reading, and that pushed out other subjects like social studies. So what has happened since then? A 2010 Brookings Institute study found that a majority of 12th grade students surveyed had never engaged in the civics exercise of writing a letter to express an opinion or a concern, and more than half had never gone on a field trip or heard from an outside speaker, more than half. Studies show that this decline is affecting young people's ability to analyze information and think critically. It also affects whether they vote and work on community issues after high school. So what can we do about this? What can we do to bring back social studies? Today, we are joined by two guests. Larry Pasca is Executive Director of the National Council for the Social Studies, which provides leadership, service, and support for all social studies educators across the country. Hi, Larry. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Nice to have you. And we're joined by Elizabeth Mann Levesque. Elizabeth is a Governance Studies Fellow at the Brown Center on Education Policy at the Brookings Institution. Hi, Elizabeth. Thank you for joining us.
Hi, Rose. Thanks so much for having me.
Great to have both of you. Well, Elizabeth, I want to start off with you. Doing some research on this show, I read a piece back in 2006 about social studies going to the back of the class. So this has been getting attention for more than a decade. Can you remind us what exactly happened when No Child Left Behind was signed by George W. Bush in 2002 and how that affected social studies?
Sure. So the No Child Left Behind Act really focused on math and reading in state accountability systems. And so, I think it's fair to say that perhaps an unintended consequence of No Child Left Behind was that less instructional time was then spent on social studies as states and school districts moved to prioritize math and reading because student performance on those particular assessments would be how schools would be assessed as to whether they were making adequate yearly progress under the law. And so I think that it's not so much an intentional de-emphasis on social studies, but more the intentional emphasis on other subjects as part of the accountability systems that I think is part of the reason, we're talking about social studies now and concerned about kind of where it falls in terms of priorities.
Larry, what would you add?
I would agree with everything you've just said, and I think the challenge that's happened is in education we often talk about this phrase that what's tested is what's taught. So if it is assessed in some way by a state or at a national level or district wide, it's going to get higher priority in the school curriculum. One of our other concerns is not just the testing mandate, but also the lack of instructional time and the real impact that has had on student achievement as they get into middle school, as they move into high school. If they've not had exposure to questions about human nature, if they haven't thought about why we have government systems, why do we use money, why do we live where we do, and what does that mean? What is our past about? If we're not answering those questions in total, through a social studies program and in tandem with other subject areas, students are not prepared as they're entering into high school. And their civic engagement, their civic learning and knowledge are severely compromised.
Well, Larry, you just answered my second question, but can you elaborate a bit? I was thinking about what I learned when I took social studies in school, and I'm sure a lot of us maybe forgot. So can you tell us what do kids learn in social studies today?
Well, social studies itself is an interesting construct. It's a subject area that was organized over a century ago to bring together multiple subjects like history, geography, economics, law, philosophy, political science. We talk a lot about STEM education in this country. I sometimes make a somewhat of a public joke about the fact that if you think about it, we're the original STEM subject. We bring together all of these different subject areas together under one house. And the idea for social studies is that we're really learning about the human world. We're learning about what makes us human, the questions and issues that we try to solve together in our humanity. And we do that through history, through geography, through these different subject areas. But you may remember in the past, you may have studied state history. You may have learned about the background of your state, the geography. Where do you live? Where are you in relation to the rest of the world? Economics, civics. Where social studies today is attempting to really move is to become more of a subject that's really asking and answering questions about our world, and less about factual knowledge and discrete pieces of information, which I think is the experience many of us may recall or think we've had. In reality, social studies education today is far more complex and profound than that. And the good news is we have a lot of sources at our disposal, and we actually see ourselves increasingly as a subject where reading, writing, and developing fundamental literacy happens.
And what would you add to that, Elizabeth? The Brookings Institution has a fairly extensive study about social studies, but what else is being taught in social studies classes today?
Sure. So the focus of this report that we published earlier this summer is particularly on civics. So I'll talk a little bit about that. And I think echoing part of what Larry just said, when we were researching for this report, what we found is that there are a number of recommendations and analysis from leaders in this field who are really emphasizing that civics education, yes, of course it has to incorporate a knowledge component, but it is also important to teach students skills and dispositions related to civics. So this is kind of coming back to the idea that what gets taught in the classroom and what happens at school actually should be about more than building factual knowledge. So, an example of that is thinking about, with respect to civics education, how do students become productive citizens? And part of that answer is, in their civics education, participating in simulations of democratic processes in the classroom. So maybe simulating an election, holding one at your school, something like that. Engaging with your community. So maybe as part of your formal curriculum, identifying an issue that matters to you and learning about what do I do about that, what's the connection to public policy, who are elected representatives, who could I write a letter to about this, as you mentioned. So one of the things that, we really found in doing this work and that we think is important to emphasize is that what gets taught should be about kind of what we might think about as traditional course content and knowledge building, but it shouldn't stop there. And in fact, we're doing students a disservice if we're thinking about civics education in those narrower terms.
And Elizabeth, I mean, it's really sad to think about the fact that, in addition to this affecting students' ability to analyze information, think critically, and really learn about the world, it also affects whether they vote and work on community issues after high school. I mean, right now, we've got a crisis in this country where about 100 million people don't vote.
Right. And so, one motivation for us in particularly focusing on civics education was, again, echoing what you said, was thinking about the divisiveness, the discord in our national politics, the lack of civic participation through voting and other means by, many, many citizens. And so this concern is exactly what prompted us to look a little bit further into it. And part of the hope on focusing on this work is helping to kind of contribute to the ongoing discussions and help put the issue of civics education and social studies really kind of front and center on the agenda when we're talking about what we should be teaching and what we should be holding schools accountable for.
Larry, since it has been a while since No Child Left Behind was signed in 2002, what else concerns you about this? At a time when we need people to be engaged and we need people to use their voices and, work on issues that they care about, what concerns you the most about kids not taking social studies?
I think there are a number of concerns. The biggest concern, I think, right now is the fact that we know that a lack of investment in professional development for educators has been one of the strong results of the past decade plus. You know, as our educators are increasingly struggling to connect with each other, you know, in places like at professional associations like ours, through their own networks online, that lack of investment has also meant that our educators, you know, are struggling to also keep up with the increasing demands and the changing landscape that a good social studies classroom could look like. And I guess what I mean by that is, you know, we need to have much more research happening in the social studies classroom. We need to understand a lot better what types of innovations are out there that can be scaled. And another challenge that I'm seeing, Rose, is that we survey students ourselves every year. We do a survey of high school seniors that are about to go to college. They're looking at their own of options, pathways. And virtually every student we survey says that they gain civic benefits from social studies classes. And I'm not just talking about, you know, they understand where to go to vote and they understand the three branches of government. It's like what Elizabeth is saying, it's deeper than that. They not just know the world, but they understand their role as a citizen. They understand the options that they have for their own careers and the economy. They can understand their role in becoming involved in the community. And so these types of civic benefits are what kids are saying to us a social studies program provides for them. And our concern at NCSS is that our students are asking for more of these types of experiences. They want this level of engagement, they want civic learning, and they want to be able to walk away from their social studies experience feeling empowered. And we believe that the data also tells us, just like I think it does in the Brookings report, that our students gain significant skills through social studies coursework. They gain critical thinking skills. They gain reading and writing skills. And I'll throw one more in there. I've talked about teacher professional development and what our students are asking for. I think as technology changes increasingly and we learn the impact of educational technology in a classroom setting, I think especially our members and other educators are talking about they'd like to see more game-based learning. They'd like to understand the roles of things like cloud computing in the classroom. We're very good in social studies about working with primary sources and historical documents, but there are untapped other resources out there, especially using learning technology effectively, that could be used, and again, could also be used in service of deeper civic learning.
Larry Paska is Executive Director of the National Council for the Social Studies, which provides leadership service and support for social studies educators across the country. We're also joined by Elizabeth Mann Levesque, a Governance Studies Fellow at the Brown Center on Education Policy at the Brookings Institution. And on today's Your Call, we are talking about the importance of social studies and what it will take to bring back social studies. If you have a child in school, are they taking social studies classes? If they're not, how does this concern you? And is there a movement to try to bring it back? And if they are, what are they learning in class? If you are a social studies teacher, we'd love to hear from you. What are you teaching this year? And talk about why this is so important. I mean, it's kind of obvious, but here we are in 2018 in the United States, and far too many students are not taking social studies classes. The toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can email your call at kalw.org or tweet us at Your Call Radio. Elizabeth, Larry was just talking about the importance of social studies, especially right now when so many young kids are engaged in activism. The student walkouts all over the country earlier this year to protest gun violence. I mean, that should be a conversation in classrooms. And I understand that the reason researchers at Brookings decided to focus on social studies is because so many issues are now being discussed on school campuses across the country.
Mm-hmm. Right. And I think that, you know, Exactly. So we saw a lot of this, you know, student activism, and I think that saw this really as a moment and as a window to say, look, Larry was talking about from what they found in their surveys, we were also seeing this in action, that students want to be engaged, and that, you know, the students who already do see opportunities for political activism and ways to engage and express themselves that way, we should be encouraging that, and we should be using this as a moment to think about what are the opportunities that we as states and school districts and individual schools, what are the opportunities that we are providing students to have those experiences and to think of themselves as citizens and engaged members of society. And part of the reason, so in our report, one of the things we do is we look at state standards related to social studies. And, you know, state standards certainly cannot tell you everything about what is happening in a state with regard to a specific subject area, you know, what individual teachers are doing. We're certainly not claiming that. But standards are important because the whole idea behind them is that by having, you know, high standards that, for example, incorporate things like participatory learning and not just discussion of current events, but also thinking about how to engage in your community. If those aspects are part of your standards, there's a higher chance that all students are going to have that kind of education. If you don't standardize that kind of instruction and that kind of, you know, classroom experience, then it's less likely that, you know, all students are going to have access to that kind of education. And then what might happen is you have some students, you know, who really benefit from this more engaged kind of civics type curriculum in their schools, while other students may not be benefiting from that. And so one thing we wanted to focus on was in this moment, think about, okay, what's our base, you know, from a national perspective, what's our coverage? How well are we, you know, as states and as districts, making sure that this isn't, this high quality, well-rounded civics education isn't just happening by chance in certain pockets? What can we do to make sure that there's better coverage for all students?
I'm so glad you brought this up because I wanted to ask you about the race and class elements of this. I mean, we know that there is a major achievement gap when we look at race and class. How does that affect social studies? I'm thinking about a couple of people I know who work at private schools, and they say that so many of the parents really want a social justice aspect brought into the classroom, and they have the finances and they have the independence to do that. But what happens in a poor school that is struggling just to bring enough paper and pencils to the classroom?
Right. So these achievement gaps that you mentioned are, they're a big problem. They're a problem in multiple subject areas, including social studies. So we look at scores on the National Assessment of Educational Progress, the NAEP, as it's commonly referred to. So this is a nationally representative test. And what we find looking at trends over time on the civics, exam, looking at eighth grade test scores, is that, you know, over the course really of the No Child Left Behind era, using the test that we have, the achievement gap between white and black students has widened slightly. The same is true, that gap has widened slightly for higher and lower income students. The gap between white and Hispanic students has narrowed slightly. But, you know, kind of the bottom line is that these achievement gaps remain wide. And I think it's really important that we pay attention to this for a number of reasons, one of which kind of comes back to what we were talking about earlier, which is, you know, these standardized tests cannot tell us everything. But what they can tell us is that there is a knowledge gap between different groups of students. And to the extent that that knowledge gap translates into different levels of political participation, feelings of investment that you are, you know, seen by as, you know, a society member who has an equal voice with other people. If you're not, you know, if that knowledge gap is kind of translating into differences in political participation, then this is going to exacerbate, you know, existing inequalities that we already see in this country.
Hmm. And Larry, what would you add specifically on the knowledge gap?
First of all, I would agree with what Elizabeth is saying, and add to that by saying that gap will then, and we don't have the data in front of us on this, but that gap then widens into a lot of other areas when we're looking at other civic issues. Can our students think about and solve questions regarding healthcare, crime, foreign policy? Can they look at issues around their community? Can they look at issues that transcend national boundaries and be able to think through solutions together? Those types of skills and abilities or and dispositions are what we're worried get lost when we're not focused on this achievement gap and when we're not focused on finding creative solutions to build a quality social studies program. You know, I talked earlier about technology, and for some listeners, you may be saying, well, that sounds really great. I don't even have a viable internet connection in my school. I can't really talk about online learning. We understand that, and that is part of the challenge. However, our kids are asking to connect with their communities, no matter how large or how small. When we ask students, if you could have a dream social studies program, what would you add to that program? They would like to visit more sites. If they could even have a guest speaker come in from their community, the local sheriff, the town mayor, somebody to come in and talk about who they are in relation to the community they're in and what opportunities await them, but what challenges they're going to face and how might they solve them. Those are initial steps. They don't require a lot of technology, but they require bringing students just outside that immediate classroom or bringing people into the classroom and giving them some opportunities and helping them to see how they are able to solve and address issues that are important to all of us. Again, I'm offering just a beginning, but it's a way to help start addressing this gap.
Go ahead, Elizabeth.
Add one other point on that. I think that, Rose, you mentioned earlier, so in this report, we look at data from a 2010 NAEP survey of students. And so this data is a little old, but it's looking at 12th grade students' responses related to their civics education. And I think something that's important to point out, so on the one hand, you know, what Larry is saying is that students really want, for example, community members, guest speakers to come into their classrooms. And on the other hand, what this survey data tells us is that 53% of students reported never going on field trips or having outside speakers with respect to their civics education. So that's over half of students. So that's another kind of gap where there's a desire among students for this dimension to their civics education, and yet the majority of students are not actually experiencing that.
That part is so sad to me. I was just thinking about how I was so affected by field trips growing up in Petaluma and going to Bodega Bay and just learning about the crabs and shells, and it just turned me into such an ocean lover. I mean, just the fact that half of the students in your study have never gone on a field trip?
Yeah.
Elizabeth, can we just talk specifically about that alone?
Sure. And just one point of clarification. So this is actually, so we didn't run this survey. So this is data that we're reporting from this NAEP survey of students. I think that, when I saw those numbers, I was pretty surprised at how many students aren't experiencing that in their civics classroom. You know, on the other hand, trying to find an optimistic angle to this, we do find, in these data, so 63% of students report discussing current events at least on a weekly basis in their civics education. So on the one hand, there is this element of talking about things that are happening in the world that matter for students in their classrooms. But, I do think, to your point, and I absolutely share your concern, that it really does seem like this element of education, which I think part of the issue is that sometimes it's kind of seen as extra or nice to have, that field trip element or bringing in community speakers. And I think that what we've heard from a lot of people, for a lot of the reasons that Larry has mentioned, there's kind of this growing awareness that those aren't necessarily extra things. Those are actually pretty vital parts of helping students learn about, how to be engaged in their communities, why they should even invest in their own education, seeing those connections between the classroom and the real world. Those are really fundamental components of a sound education.
Yes, definitely. On today's Your Call, we are talking about the importance of social studies and what it will take to bring back social studies. This is Your Call. We'll be back after this. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, we will talk about the Trump administration closing the door on immigrants. The admissions limit for refugees has been slashed by more than half. Family, immigration, and employment-based visas are being limited. There's so many more things that are happening. So what options do people have? We will also talk later in the show tomorrow with a ProPublica reporter who looked at sexual abuse at detention centers housing immigrant children. Just another horrific angle to this story. We're also putting shows together about the future of healthcare and the Affordable Care Act, and we're going to talk about the horrific fires in the West. Just in California, there are over 12,000 firefighters from across the country fighting 17 fires, and this is very early in the season. So many people say that this is our new norm, so we hope you can join us for those shows. Today, we are talking about the importance of social studies and what happens when students spend less time in social studies class. This is happening because of No Child Left Behind. It was signed by George W. Bush in 2002, and schools are required to emphasize math and reading, which pushes out other subjects like social studies. And if you'd like to join us, if you have any comments on this, if you have personal experience, if you're a teacher, if you have a child in school, or if you remember your social studies class and how it affected your ability to think critically, maybe it opened the door for something that you just didn't have access to beforehand. The toll-free number is 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org or tweet at yourcallradio. Today we're joined by Larry Paska, Executive Director of the National Council for the Social Studies. They provide support for social studies educators across the country. And Elizabeth Mann Levesque is Governance Studies Fellow at the Brown Center on Education Policy at the Brookings Institution. We have an email from Harriet who says, I fear that the benefits which the guests are explaining are exactly those which our most powerful politicians and individuals revile. Thoughtful, well-read, and educated citizens eager to vote and competent in expressing their considered opinions to their representatives are not going to fall for phonies or fascists. And as an example, she cites the article about from the New York Times about the Trump administration considering bypassing Congress to grant another $100 billion tax cut, mainly to the wealthy. And I think this is a great point, Larry. I mean, the more engaged people you have, the more outraged they're going to be about things like this.
The good news, I think, that we're seeing around the country right now is that our students are engaged. They engage very quickly and very very easily and very vocally around issues. And so a lot of what we've seen over the past year around the country, obviously the nationwide response to the Parkland massacre, to other events that are happening, I think you have people engaged already. I think the challenge for us in social studies is never to teach you what to think, but how to think. And so what we're trying to do in social studies classes is encourage students to ask questions. We want them to think about what tools they would use to answer those questions. You've just discussed a current event happening in California now that's going to affect the entire country. We're all going to be talking about how to address issues of public safety, health, rebuilding an economy, you know, taking care of our people and our communities. So it's in a perfect world, and the world we aspire to is how do we use social studies for that greater good, that our job is to help you have the information you need to make informed decisions and take informed action. And that is a responsibility of everyone living in this country. That's an aspiration, I think, that we have for people worldwide. And social studies educators simply want to give those students the tools and the means to be able to engage in that world.
Elizabeth, what would you add?
Sure. I think that another piece of, you know, potentially good news is that there is, I think, a foundation, at least when we think about the standards that states have with respect to civics education for this kind of education. So, for example, when we looked at state standards related to civics, we found that in those standards, 40 states mentioned news media literacy. And so this kind of goes to the question about, you know, what role does civics education have to play here in preparing students, you know, and students and, you know, everyone basically to be able to read and understand the news and identify, you know, truth from fiction. And so I think that on the one hand, there is a strong foundation already really baked into state standards with relationship to, you know, being able to assess the news. On the other hand, I think that there's a new challenge at the same time, which is that, you know, social media and, you know, fake news being spread on Facebook and Twitter and things like that. I think that the challenge for our schools and our teachers will be to figure out how do we adapt to this, the changes in technology, changes in the way that information is spread and shared, changes in different news sources. So how do we adapt to that and then help teach students the tools that they're going to need going forward to really be able to, like Larry said, assess what they're reading and kind of come to conclusions on their own. The one other thing I'll add is this kind of comes back to what Larry was talking about earlier with the importance of professional development and supporting teachers, you know? So this is a case in point. What do we need to do to support teachers so that they're prepared to help students read Twitter and read their Facebook feeds and separate fact from fiction and come to informed conclusions on their own?
What are you hearing from social studies teachers, Larry? How are they taking action on this issue to bring social studies back to schools?
Well, many of our members and just many educators around the country are involved in the several task forces that exist in states to redesign state social studies standards. We're very proud. We have a very strong network of state affiliates, state chapters of and councils for social studies. And many states do invite teachers on those committees to help revise the standards. They work in partnership with their state professional associations for social studies educators. So there's that conversation happening, you know, at a local level. In terms of the advocacy that we're encouraging around the country, we're trying to focus a lot of our efforts now on how we ensure that there's equitable time for social studies at the elementary level. Equity is not equality. We know we can't cram 16 subjects in a six-hour school day, but what we can do is look at how is social studies happening at the elementary level. When you're teaching reading and writing, how can you ensure that the content is based within the social studies disciplines? Professional development is another piece that we've talked about today. But a lot of our members right now are also, and other educators that we speak with, are very focused on how we bring the conversation forward that the reduction in course time has really hurt kids going into high school, that the focus on standardized testing that we've talked about has really hurt the instructional program. It's increased class sizes. Elizabeth's study also speaks to the fact that social studies teachers tend to teach larger class sizes in general. The reduction of funding and the decreased budgets, not just for instructional programs and resources, but again, professional learning for educators. Those are things that our community, I think, is very heavily focused on. And one other piece that's kind of interesting to me is I think educators want more time to collaborate together. We have data that says that they're looking for time to collaborate with each other to share best practices. And I think these are some of the issues kind of on the mind of educators right now.
This brings up a couple of questions. There was a story in the Massachusetts paper, The Sun Chronicle, about State Senator Mark Pacheco, who has been pushing for an overhaul of how the state schools approach civics education because his office is finding that more and more people do not understand the differences between state and federal legislators. So we're talking about very basic information here. And according to this report, his constituents have been calling his office with federal legislative concerns. So can you talk to us, Larry, just about how different states are approaching social studies requirements? And as you say, teachers really have to focus on social media and what is fake news versus real news. How do you determine what is factual while at the same time teaching the basics? What are the differences between state and federal legislators?
So because we, if you recall going back to 2010 when the Common Core State Standards were first released for English Language Arts and Mathematics, you really had kind of a nationwide conversation around kind of a common set of standards and practices in those disciplines. We released in 2013 in partnership with 15 other professional organizations a document called the C3 Framework that stands for College, Career, and Civic Life Framework for state social studies standards. It is not meant to be a prescriptive set of standards in and of themselves. It is a framework. It's meant to help states and local school districts align their instructional programs to social studies to ensure that social studies subjects are focused in a process of inquiry, of asking questions, using evidence, supporting conclusions, helping kids engage in civic learning. What's happened now is because each state has chosen whether to use this framework fully, use parts of it in their own review process, or some states have chosen not to use it in their standards review process, we find that practices really are different across the country. The biggest trends across the country that we see, and I know the Elizabeth's report addresses this as well, is the lack of time at the elementary level, the lack of real consistent graduation and course requirements across the state. Some states offer one or more courses in civic learning or social studies in general. Some go up to four. My home state has a four-credit requirement, the state I live in now as well, but many states may only have one or two-credit requirements. And the other big trend line nationwide is the reduction in social studies assessments. Very few states really assess social studies at the elementary, middle, and high school levels. Most may have some type of exam either at high school or at the end of middle school, but we're not seeing it across the grade levels like we would in other subject areas.
Elizabeth, what stood out in the report about the differences we're seeing from state to state?
Sure. So one thing we did in the report is we looked at a set of practices that are often referred to as the proven practices, and we looked at just a couple of those practices that we thought we could actually reasonably expect to find in state standards and curriculum. And what we found across several of these practices, kind of the big picture, is that the knowledge component is more consistently included in state standards than this kind of skills and dispositions component. So, for example, we find, in all states and Washington, D.C., we find that discussion of current events is mentioned in state standards or curriculum. We also find that 43 states, that's including D.C., require at least one civics-related course for high school graduation. So in terms of kind of building that knowledge base, at least on paper, we see that those requirements are pretty consistently there. But then when we look at something like state standards mentioning participation in simulations of democratic procedures in class, so again, mock trials, debates, elections, things like that, we see that just over half of states, about 27 states, mention those simulations in their standards. We see that even fewer states mention service learning, where, participation in service that is meaningfully incorporated into the classroom curriculum. Even fewer states, we find, mention service learning in their standards. So, as Larry was saying, we found a lot of variation, even just looking at standards, and that how that variation really broke down is that there's states more consistently include kind of discussion-based and knowledge-based requirements, but they're less likely to include those participatory elements.
And what would you both say would be the most effective thing that people can do to get involved in this? If people are, trying to pressure their state or their local government, education board, for example, to ensure that social studies is added back to classrooms. Have there been many campaigns like this, Elizabeth? Do you know of any?
I don't know as much about that aspect of kind of the grassroots, maybe mobilization to really prioritize that. So Larry may be able to speak to that better than I can. But one thing that I would say, and this is, so with the passage of the Every Student Succeeds Act in 2015, so that replaced No Child Left Behind, this is kind of in broad strokes really a window of opportunity for states to use the flexibility that law gave them to think about what should be in our accountability systems, what should we measure, and what should we expect our schools to be teaching of students. Now, included in that law are a number of requirements for states to engage stakeholders when they're coming up with their accountability plans and when they're implementing them. And, so there are all these aspects of stakeholder engagement that are required as part of that law. And so I think that really kind of on a more high level, I think that there's an opportunity now where federal law requires kind of states allowing and seeking out input from different types of people as we think about these accountability systems moving forward. So I do think that there are opportunities, perhaps more so than in the past, for people to get involved on this.
Larry, what would you add about people getting involved?
I would add that you do see some connection together on an organizational level. So, for example, there's an initiative called the Action Civics Initiative, which is a grouping of about 35-plus organizations. These are professional associations, they're other groups, independents, nonprofits, and they're working together. We're part of this initiative. And the goal is to elevate the conversation around action civics, the idea that it's not just knowing and the skills of maybe doing projects in classrooms that go in portfolios and get tucked away for the end of the year, we pass the course, but rather how do we get kids to actually apply their learning into something real, that they're solving real-world challenges and they're applying their learnings to issues that matter to them. Those organizations are out there. We're connected to them. And the good news is that you're seeing more and more of these organizations get together around the country to promote the idea of stronger civic learning and civic engagement. As far as at a local level, we often coach our members, anyone else that we're speaking to, it does start at the school board meeting. It starts sometimes in the supermarket line. What's going on in social studies in the school? Asking our children, asking a student, what are you learning in social studies? What's happening in the school curriculum? It sounds kind of basic to start there, but it really does start there. When you're a board member asking people in your community, what do you know about social studies? You're starting the conversation. Organizations like ours have an honor society for social studies. It's called Rho Kappa. It's an honor society for juniors and seniors that honors their achievement in social studies and gives them the opportunity to be part of meaningful projects where they're demonstrating civic engagement and promoting their own civic learning beyond the formal classroom. Those types of things are there at a kind of a grassroots level, and we're trying to encourage more and more of our educators to not just take advantage of those opportunities, but to start being able to ask the conversations in their communities about how to bring resources like Action Civics and others directly in, how they can use the proven practices that Elizabeth described and others to encourage a deeper conversation about the role of social studies in the overall instructional program.
Larry Pasca is Executive Director of the National Council for the Social Studies. They provide support for social studies educators across the country. And Elizabeth Mann Levesque is a Governance Studies Fellow at the Brown Center on Education Policy at the Brookings Institution. On today's Your Call, we are talking about what it will take to bring social studies classes back. When No Child Left Behind was signed by George W. Bush in 2002, schools had to really emphasize math and reading, which pushed out subjects like social studies. And there's just so many reasons why social studies is so important for kids. Studies show that when students do not take social studies, it affects their ability to analyze information, to think critically. It affects whether they vote and if they work on issues after high school. And there definitely is a race and class gap to this issue as well. And if you'd like to join us, if you have any questions or comments for our guests, you can email yourcall@kalw.org or give us a call, 866-798-8255. We have an email from Leslie. She says, social studies are more important than ever in today's global world. It affects all social and business life. People need to study geography to know where countries are. They need to study where natural resources are found and developed or exploited, study and know different climate systems, study the economics of trade, study civics. Her list goes on. She writes, this will allow them to communicate with people from different cultures, and it'll allow them to be empowered in their community and our governmental process. Well, thank you for the email, Leslie. There's also other studies out there about how it's hard to really get a decent paying job without the skills gained from social studies. This is according to a survey in the Chronicle of Higher Education. And it found that, students who don't take social studies and don't have these skills have a difficult time getting a good paying job. And then take it even further. According to a Harvard University poll, people living in families with incomes under $15,000 voted at just over half the rate of those living in families with incomes over $75,000. So, Larry, this really affects students well into their adult lives.
It absolutely does. And I think, just as Leslie's comments were really powerful to us as well, it's the fact that we're talking about a well-rounded education and what's the foundation of that. And the simple fact that even jobs, even if you never leave your community for work, to build, you know, to raise a family, to build a life, you likely are interacting with people from other cultures. You're interacting with products and supply chains and dealing with issues that really become very global in nature. And so we really see social studies as the start. We go back to, we are the subject area that's about the question, asking and answering the questions about the world around us. I keep going back to that refrain because that ultimately it's the foundation, we think, of a well-rounded education.
Elizabeth, what would you add?
Sure. One thing I would add to this is, you know, kind of, I absolutely agree with Larry's point. And I think that, you know, something that's important to keep in mind is that schools, you know, through the history of this country have really had a pretty broad mandate, part of which is to prepare students to be, you know, productive, engaged citizens who can grapple with questions and debate them in, you know, a civil and productive manner with other people, can engage in conversations where they disagree with other people, and come out of that actually having moved forward. And, you know, I unfortunately don't know how much of a great example a lot of our, you know, leaders and politicians are setting in terms of that right now. And so I think, you know, this kind of speaks to Leslie's point that social studies education absolutely has a role to play in helping people, you know, see something from another perspective and want to learn about people who, you know, maybe grew up differently from you and be able to talk about these issues. And, you know, those are skills, right? People aren't just born learning how to empathize with someone with a very different experience and then also, you know, bring that perspective into a conversation about public policy. Those are skills that are taught. You know, and teaching them in a social studies classroom is, you know, one opportunity to really build, a citizenry who's kind of capable of having those conversations.
Well, we have to bring the Trump administration into this conversation because at the beginning of the year, The Intercept reported that Education Secretary Betsy DeVos told an audience of conservative lawyers that civics and history have taken a back seat in K-12 education. And then she said history and civics have been targeted by, quote, revisionists. According to The Intercept piece, the crowd nodded approvingly when she said she fears we have launched more than one generation that isn't even at the schoolhouse rock level. So what about this, Larry? Have you seen any indication from DeVos that she will be taking action to reform the way that social studies are taught in the United States from the federal level?
At the present moment, we haven't seen a strong focus on K-12 education. And so I think we would welcome the conversation to talk with the Department of Education about the role of social studies education in the K-12 program, how we can support a stronger, more equitable focus for social studies at the elementary level, you know, again, continuing to invest in teacher professional development, and again, working with our data that says that our students are asking for more and more civic engagement, civic learning opportunities, and that they see the benefits of this. But we would welcome that conversation on how to support social studies in the K-12 program.
And one thing that Elizabeth. I would add, and this may seem naive in this particular political climate, but to my knowledge, there is not evidence that social studies teachers, teach this subject infused with their own partisan views on the left or on the right. You know, I just don't think we have evidence that shows that. And I think that exactly because of this point that Larry has made, that this is a subject area where you're not teaching students what to think, you're teaching them how to ask questions and how to think for themselves and come to logical, sound, evidence-based conclusions. And so my hope would be that this is something, and this is the part that may sound naive, but my hope would be this is something where there is, you know, bipartisan commitment to thinking about how do we help students, gain these critical thinking skills, which are going to prepare them for the job market and, a workforce that is rapidly changing, where problem solving, critical thinking, teamwork, these are the skills that are less likely to be replaced by things like automation. And so as a country, how do we come together and think about how we invest in helping our students develop those skills where, you know, it's not about are you being taught from a particular perspective. It's, you know, how equipped are your teachers to help you develop, you know, this question-asking ability.
Mm. Well, we're getting a couple of emails from listeners who say that the system is designed this way so people don't vote, so people don't engage. And Sandy just sent us a piece from Foreign Policy that said, Trump won because voters are ignorant, literally. So how would you answer or comment on listener emails, Larry, from people who say this is the wealthiest country on the planet? I mean, how do we not have social studies that teach kids to think critically? I mean, a lot of people say it's designed this way, so half the country doesn't vote.
That's a very good question. I think there are a couple of ways to approach it. You know, it's hard when you're... I was a classroom teacher. I taught middle school social studies, and you know, when you're teaching, you're constantly worried about, you know, I want to make sure that I'm encouraging my students to be critical thinkers. I don't want to address controversial subjects in a way that's going to make my students uncomfortable, that's going to get me in trouble, that's going to make my community unhappy. We actually have position statements to address how to teach controversial subjects and how to teach news media literacy. And you know, even with these types of guidance pieces out there, I think you have a lot of educators that feel under pressure to do this kind of work well. And then at the same time, you know, you also have just the fact that, you know, if it's not connected in some kind of way to something real world for kids, a lot of the subject matter may seem just too distant for them. I taught the Electoral College during the election of 2000. I have to tell you, it was one of my proudest moments of watching seventh graders understand electoral votes and how they matter and how they work. But that was because there was an immediate and direct hook. It was in the news. Every 12-year-old was coming into my room that day saying, "How do we not know who our president is?" And I would say that, you know, teaching controversial issues, but also making sure that you're engaging directly in current issues as they're happening and tying them back to, again, that idea of how do I think about this? Not what do I think about it, but how do I think about it? That's where we can really see some strength in our discipline.
Well, thank you for all that work that you did, Larry. We do a lot of shows about teachers, and we'll continue to bring teachers on the show, and we'll continue to do shows like this one about the importance of social studies. Larry Paska is Executive Director of the National Council for the Social Studies. Larry, thank you for your work. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Rose, and it was a pleasure to be with you today.
You too. Thank you. And Elizabeth Mann Levesque is a Governance Studies Fellow at the Brown Center on Education Policy at the Brookings Institution. Elizabeth, thank you for your work, and thank you for joining us.
Thanks very much for having me, Rose. This is great.
Thank you. Coming up tomorrow, we will talk about how the Trump administration is closing the door on immigrants. Your Call is produced here at KALW in San Francisco. Thanks for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call.